guys. This is Taste Masters with your hosts, David and Wyatt. So, Wyatt, a few weeks ago, you went on a trip with your girlfriend, Ariana.
Yeah.
To the Bahamas?
Yeah. Oh, Caribbean. Western Caribbean. Yeah.
How was that?
It was cool. It was really cool. Honestly, it was cooler than I expected. It was like a family thing. Like, my brothers and parents and stuff, my parents decided on a trip, so we all went on a trip with them. And they like to go cruising and do cruise and stuff, so that's what we did.
And you brought back a gift for me.
I did. I brought back a few beers for you. There was like every place we stopped had like their own local beers, which I thought fucking cool. So I brought back some beers. A couple of them are from breweries that have been established for 50 years, which is pretty cool. I mean, like, I feel like in the United States, what do you find this 50-year-old fucking Budweiser?
Sam Adams.
Is Sam Adams that old?
I think so.
I mean, I know we talked about it before, but I feel like it was reestablished. Yeah, I want to say like 70s or 80s. I actually had a Sam Adams last night. I had a couple in my fridge. I'm sorry, dude. You know you always have a free invite to come drink all the shitty beer in my fridge.
You always tell me to take beer when I leave.
Yeah, that's true. Not that Sam Adams is shitty beer. I love Sam Adams. But I was having like this like creamy Tuscan chicken, and I was like, what's going to pale with this? And I thought about going for a cutthroat, and I was like, had a cutthroat the other night. Going Sam Adams. It was perfect, dude.
Good choice.
Crisp, lager yeast, the hoppiness cut right through the creaminess of the chicken. It was really good, dude. Really good. But I brought some beers. So our goal today is we're going to drink the beers. We're going to taste the beers. I mean, like, they're, like, simple, super, like, crushable. Like, that's the whole goal of these beers. The bigger focus today for us is we want to talk about the process of brewing, which hopefully will lead into some cool future stuff that we're doing. Cool stuff that we're doing in the future.
But it has led into it because we have breweries lined up to do brewery tours.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
So we're pretty excited to do some of that stuff. So tasting beer is like it's going to be fun, but it's like a number two thing.
But we got to know how you make the beer.
So we'll talk about the beer for a second. First beer I brought is the Salva Vida. I can't read any of the stuff on there because it's in Spanish, all of it. Man, I saw the alcohol percentage on here earlier. This one is from Honduras, Roatán, Honduras. So that's cool.
So did you go to Honduras when you were on your trip?
Yes, we stopped at Roatán, Honduras, Belize City. Belize, pretty sure Belize is the country as well.
Belize is the country.
Yeah, and we also stopped in, Playa del Carmen. What's right across from it? There's like a small island in Mexico, like right outside of Mexico. Fuck, I forget the name of it. But I have some Mexican beer in my fridge. Maybe we should drink a Bohemia as well. Because I didn't bring any beer from there because I was like, if you want to get beer from Mexico, you can buy it at the fucking grocery store.
That's true, yeah. They let you travel with this from the Bahamas?
Yeah. So we traveled through Texas, and I had to pay taxes on it in Texas, which I thought was fucking dumb.
For the beer? But, the beer back?
Bringing the beer back, I had to pay tax as if I had bought it in Texas. And then I also had to take it through customs. Like pay a transportation fee.
That's dumb.
But it is a delicious island beer nonetheless. Beautiful color, nice and light. God, I can already see that's gonna be crisp. Nice amount of head too. Like usually you don't see a lot of head on light beers that really holds on.
But it is that straw. Well. It has that straw color though. It's nice. It smells musty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a few weeks old.
Ah.
From when I bought it. It smells like I want to say like Landshark Lager, like beers from my childhood, like what my dad used to drink, like O'Doul's kind of shit, you know?
Gotcha. Not bad on the taste. Sweeter than I thought. Not that it was just sugary, but it's sweeter.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It's not bad at all.
I mean, dude, when I was on a beach, I was crushing these left and right. Other people were drinking margaritas. I was like, I don't know about that. This beer is crushable.
This is not bad.
It's a good beer, right?
It's a pale lager, right?
Yeah, just a nice light lager.
So pale lager. It's a 4.8.
It says, La Cerveza de Honduras.
The beer of Honduras.
Yep. Pretty tasty, though.
Yeah, I like it. Not bad.
This is, I think, one of my more favorite light beers. But it could just be because there aren't a lot of light beers that I've really crushed a whole lot of at the beach. I don't spend a whole lot of time at the beach because it's so far away. And so, that's some good memories, drinking this beer, crushing by the beach.
I like that. But it goes back to beer invokes memories. Memories, you know. Which is funny because the Beer Advocate shows us as 65, which is a poor rating on Beer Advocate. But I don't know what they say. No, I think I would drink this at a pool.
Yeah, it's a crushable beer. Like, as far as light beer goes.
And it's lightly carbonated.
Yeah.
It's not overbearing at all.
Yeah. As far as light beer goes, like a little bit of flavor, and then it's gone.
Do you get, like, a honey note to it?
Yeah. Something a little sweet there. That's just,
okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. Good find, Wyatt. Good find.
So I like that one a lot.
I think we go into the beginnings of mashing. Excuse me. Oh, God.
Milling. The process of brewing.
The process of brewing.
Hear ye.
So Wyatt, start us off with the process of brewing.
Cool. Before we start real fast, we have a book that we've been referencing. It was recommended to us by Sean Smith, our local brewmaster. Good friend of ours. Master Smith himself. It's called How to Brew, Everything You Need to Know to Brew Great Beer Every Time by John J. Palmer.
That's a strong name.
John J. Palmer.
I want to say John J. Jingleheimer Smith.
But... John J. Jingleheimer Smith. But he looks like a John J. Palmer if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
But guy makes phenomenal beer. Has a great book on it. This is one of Sean's favorites. References it all the time. Even now, he's been in the beer industry for 15 years? Is that what it
plus,
was?
Plus, yeah.
Or has been brewing beer for 15 years? Sean references this book, and he'll go back and read it because there are things that he may forget or things that he'll remember in here and be like, oh shit, maybe I should try this. Fantastic book on the basics of beer. And I would recommend anyone who wants to get into beer, buy it, read it, learn how to make your own fucking beer.
Why not? Because we're going to dabble in that soon.
Yeah. So that'll be a big step for us in the future. We're going to try making our own beer. I'm really excited for that. We're going to talk about the process of brewing an all-grain beer. There's a difference. You can use beers that have concentrated wort, which is, I feel like it's cheating, to just add a wort extract.
Yeah.
But a lot of places do it. Kind of makes one-dimensional beers, in my opinion. But I've also tried some good ones that are, have a wort extract. But I think the brewer there also kind of takes things into his own hands, goes a little off recipe.
Right.
And we have a beer that we may try in the future from that brewer as well. I've got it in my fridge. We'll have to try that one outside of Utah as well for other reasons. So we're going to get into the process of brewing an all-grain beer. First step, you got to mill in. So you've got all these grains, barley, wheat, oat, corn, whatever the fuck you're brewing with, rice, I don't give a shit. I hope that it's, mostly barley, because I like mostly barley beers in general. But you take your grains, these whole roasted grains and malts, and you put them in a mill, and it squishes
basically
them and
crushes,
breaks them up.
So it grounds up the kernel, right? It breaks off.
Basically, it breaks it down so that the water that comes in later, so the next step is mashing in, breaks it down so that when you mash in, you can get more sugars out of those grains.
Right.
So you want to get every possible sugar you can out of those grains, because the more sugar you get, the more alcohol, the more body, the more flavor you're going to get in your beer in the end, right? So you take all these complex starches and break them down into simple sugars.
Because the more simple, the more you get.
Yeah. And yeast has an easier time breaking down simpler sugars. So that brings us to our next step, the mash. This is the initial process of extracting sugars from the grains. And it's pretty important to keep your eye on temperature throughout this whole process. So the ideal mash temperature is usually 145 to 158 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. That's 63 to 70 degrees Celsius, if you like to keep track of Celsius. But if you go lower than that, you're going to not break down as much of the sugar, you won't get as much out of the grains. If you go higher than that, you're going to break down sugars, but it's going to be too complex. It's going to be too long a sugar molecule, and yeast has a hard time breaking down that. So you'll have a really sugary beer if you go higher. You'll have kind of a bitter and astringent beer if you go lower. You want to keep the temperature ideally between 145 and 158. Temperature can change a little bit depending on the beer. But personally, I would just pick a number in between 151, 152, and I would try to shoot for that the whole time. Right. And this makes it so you can get all the sugar you can out of those grains. So that's your initial process of mashing in. And a lot of times when you mash in, let's say you've got this is just an example of 10 pounds of grain, you'll probably use 10 or 12 pounds of water. So you just a touch more water than you've got grains.
Right.
From what I understand, that could be wrong. Your next step is lottering. That's the process of separating the wort Aura.
But that's the lottering is where that's that big tank, right? Where they've transferred it and basically it's filtered in simpler terms, right?
Yeah, yeah. So oftentimes people use the same mash tun and lotter tun. You can call it either one, but that's where you mash or lotter.
Right.
Sometimes they're separate, but oftentimes they're the same, and they've got what's called a false bottom. So you've got like this, usually just kind of like a metal grate with really fine holes in it so that you can drop the water out. Now, when you lotter, it's important not to go too fast. So, like, basically when you lotter, you're taking the water that is already in there, in the mash. And, think of the mash as like hot cereal, right? Like, you've got all these basic crushed grains, and you're just kind of running hot water on top of there. You hit a certain point, and you start the lotter. The lotter is where you draw water out of the bottom, cycle it back up, and spray it on top. And so, basically what this does is helps extract the rest of the sugars out of the grains. There's three primary steps to the lotter. You've got the mash out, which is where you raise the temperature to above 77 degrees Celsius or 170 degrees Fahrenheit. So you're making it
hotter.
Yeah, so you make it hot, really hot.
To stop the conversion of the enzymes.
Exactly.
Right.
So that stops everything from transferring over. And basically, kind of what you've got is what you've got there. That stops the conversion. And then you start your recirculation. So you draw wort from the bottom and spray it on top.
You were saying, it goes through that false bottom and it gets sprayed back on top.
And then you've got your sparge, which is basically where you spray new water on top of those grains to try to get everything out. As you do this, so like let's say you start your lotter, and you've got your recirculation cycle going, and you want to do this for like, I don't know, like fucking 10 minutes or whatever, right? So you're drawing water out of the bottom and spraying it back on top. Now you want to be careful when you're doing this, because if you draw water out of the bottom too fast, spray it back on top, everything's going to collapse. And if it collapses, then you're going to get a bunch of sediment in your lines, and you're going to have like tannins and shells and stuff that transfer over into the boil kettle. So after recirculation, when you start the sparge, you open up a line so you can start to draw the water from the mash tun, lotter tun into your boil kettle. The boil kettle is usually pretty close, right? So usually there's some sort of pump or something. You'll open up this line, and you'll start spraying new water over, but you don't want to go too fast, because if you go too fast, it'll fall out, and you'll get that weird shit in the boil kettle.
And that can ruin beers. And this is a delicate process. Yeah, all this delicate. Anything within these steps or processes gets ruined or funked up, it will literally ruin the beer. And sometimes, I mean, we've learned from Derek and Sean where you can supposedly kind of, quote-unquote, mess up a beer, but still turn it into something great, but it's hard to fix.
Yeah.
And that's in that process.
You've got to be really careful and keep like a close eye on all these steps.
And it's not just willy-nilly. Yeah. You got to do the correct calculations. Mm-hmm. There's biology behind it. There's physics behind it. There's chemistry behind it. It is a complex form of art.
Yeah. Yeah. Biology, chemistry, and physics. Like, you got to have a pretty good understanding of all three of those to be able to brew beer.
And that was
even like when I shadowed like Sean and Derek, have done it a few times now, just like fucking remembering what levers to pull and like what order. Like, there's so much, like it's complicated as shit. There's a lot that goes into it.
Intricate system that it's involved. Like, even the equipment they have, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've got multiple millions of dollars worth of equipment, and
that's a pretty small brewery. But they're very familiar with them. They get to, they don't fuck around with it.
They work with them every day.
And they're familiar with it. That's why they work with it every day.
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing. And they're just trying to perfect it. And the reason why I appreciate brewers in general is they're always a good brewer, because they're always trying to perfect what they already know.
Yeah.
And they try to challenge themselves. Because I've learned with people like, you know, we've interviewed Scott, we've interviewed Derek and Sean. They're never satisfied.
Yeah.
They're always wanting more. They're doing better. And I love that, because it's not just you built something, like you build a car, it's done. Go on. No, there can be a better version of a car. Like, think of it's totally tangent, but think of my favorite car of all time is a 1967 Bullet Mustang.
Oh, hell yeah. The green one?
Yes.
The fastback?
They made three Bullet Mustangs of all time for Steve McQueen's movie, The Bullet.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite, like, if I could. So then they recreated it for Gone in 60 Seconds. They call it the Eleanor.
Uh-huh.
Basically the same. I think it's a GT on that one. But nevertheless, so they have the Mustang, and then the Mustang, they just brought back the Bullet Mustang again. They brought it back. They revamped it. They put electricity, the electronic stuff in it. It's not just gas and hoses, right? It's different. It's upgraded. Is it the same nostalgic Steve McQueen? No, because it has a lot of authentic whatever.
Yeah.
But the newer version of it, I'll have to pull it out for you. But it's still cool. It's still badass. I still want the old one, but I want the old one to work like the new one.
Right.
Because the old one, you breaks down. Yeah. Fuck. The new one, you take it back.
Oh, dude, the old one, it breaks down. You fucking bust out a wrench and do it yourself, because it's so fucking, those mechanical nowadays, systems make so
I'm not
much
like
sense.
You where I use my hands to fix shit. I'm going to go to the store and be like, hey, fix this shit. You can do it. I hire someone to do it, basically. That's why if I were good with my hands, kind of like how you are, I wouldn't mind getting an older car, more of an authentic car.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would be able to, this is my baby. I know it. Kind of like Sean and Derek do. This is their baby. They know the pieces and parts of it. Yeah, there could be better technology that could help them, but they're not going to go deter from what does work.
Yeah.
They're just going to try to master it and perfect it. And that's what I love about this. Crafting beer in general, not just the mass productions that get a bad name, AB or whatever the rest of it.
Yeah.
But the small people, they're doing the best.
Yeah.
Even these small mini microbreweries are popping up here and there. They're doing the best they can with what they have. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Makes damn good beer, too.
Very much so.
With that, cars in the past, race cars, right? Formula One race cars in the 60s didn't go nearly as fast as they do now, right? And you think, athletes now, they say they're bigger, stronger, faster, right? They're, Usain Bolt setting fucking records and shit. Like records that people were like, I probably won't ever be broken. We're setting new records all the time. I think that beer must be getting better as well.
I think so.
We've got new styles. Yeah, things are getting better all the time for sure. Especially with beer, I think. We're getting better and better at keeping track of records, and people are trying new things and stuff like that.
Right, and I like that because I like the idea of having records held on to, but secretly I like the idea of records being broken.
Dude,
if
everyone
I can watch
likes
them,
to see a record breaking.
But you see those old school records I hope this stands the test of time. But at the same time, you're like, but if I watch that get broken, that's badass. Yeah. That's super cool.
Yeah. There's a coach that I, and a gym that I follow a lot called Westside Barbell. They always talk about how a great athlete can become a coach, but they won't ever be a great coach until they make an athlete that's better than they were as an athlete. You've got to be able to make athletes better than you were.
Yeah.
And that's the mark of a great coach, someone who makes athletes better than they were.
But anyway, so we just finished the three-step process of the lottery.
Yeah.
So let's pause here and open the second beer out of the three you had. So what's this one?
This one's the Belkin from Belize. A Belizean original anniversary edition Belkin 50-year all malt brewing lager.
So 50-year, they've been...
They've been open for 50 years. So I don't think they've aged this line lager for 50 years.
Sala Vida from Honduras, we had that one. So now this one's the...
The Belkin has a cool picture on there of a Aztec pyramid, too. And if you look on the side of the bottle, it's got those as well.
Oh, that's badass.
It's a fucking cool
bottle,
man.
That's super cool, yeah. Belkin, huh?
Right. And when I brought this, initially when I mentioned it, you were like, I've heard of Belkin before.
I have heard of Belkin. It's very familiar.
Right. We got ourselves a Belizean light lager as well. It's very similar, I think, to the other beer.
So you had Sala Vida at Honduras, liked it, then you went to Belize and then had this one.
Yeah.
Which one, before I tasted it, which one did you like better?
I like the one from Honduras more. But I was on a really cool beach in Honduras, and we were mostly in the city in Belize. Uh-huh. So I feel like maybe if I'd gone to the beach, I don't know, it was setting thing. I just wanted to sit my ass in a beach chair and maybe walk around the ocean and stuff. We went paddleboarding, which was cool.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah.
That's super cool. But, I mean... Thank you, first off, for bringing these beers that you can no longer get unless you go back to, thank you for sharing this with us.
Yeah, no problem.
With me, not us, but with me, selfishly. It's a big company in Belize, the Belkin Brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one looks just slightly darker than the other one.
It's a skosh darker.
It's a skosh darker, yeah.
And off the nose, it's not as funky.
No.
Not as harsh.
A lot more malt sweetness, kind of very simple still, but a more of that kind of basic grain smell, you know what I'm saying?
Totally side note, you can't smell sweet's not something you pick up,
really.
but it's not sweet. It's what is making it sweet.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So, for example, we don't smell sweet. We smell the honey.
Yeah.
Right?
And we know that honey is sweet.
Exactly.
Interesting. So we should try to identify what makes it sweet.
Exactly. This smells sweet. I wonder what it's from.
But that's what I get is like a honey.
It smells like corn to me.
Like a honey, like cereal kind of smell.
I get cereal, but you smell like corn? Like smell deep.
I'm trying to smell as deep as I can, man.
It's got like that like sweet corn taste to it.
I could get a little bit of corn.
Let me see. So Beer Advocate has this Belkin beer, 69, also poor, which I don't give a shit because...
We haven't tasted yet. Maybe you will give a shit.
Let's see. It's sweet.
Significantly sweeter. But there's something like a weird kind of bitterness there. Like in the middle. Like usually I feel like bitterness kind of hits like the back end, but there's a weird...
It's in the middle of my tongue.
Yeah.
It's not in the front or the back. It's right in the... You're right. Mm-hmm. It's in the middle.
And it almost reminds me of like tannin from a wine. I don't know. Yeah. I don't like the bitterness in that. That's uncomfortable.
That bitterness is what kind of throws it off.
Yeah. It would be a really good beer if it didn't have that.
I mean, it was nice. It was nice golden taste. It had light malt.
Sweet. Yeah, yeah. Like
but that little bitter, bit of malt what sweetness. Is that bitter? I can't name it.
I don't know. Probably something fucked up in it.
But I like the first one better.
Yeah.
This one's not bad. I mean, I'd still crush this one.
Right. I don't think I would crush this one if it was cold.
Yeah, that bitterness, it stays right in your tongue.
It really lingers for a long time. But it's not like a pleasant bitterness. Like sometimes hops kind of have like a little bit of a pleasant bitterness.
Yeah.
This is not a pleasant bitterness.
I don't like it. It's a off-putting bitterness.
Yeah, it's like, so this is what I imagine happened. I imagine that they probably got some fucking husk or something in their water. Back to brewing.
Yeah, let's go back to brewing.
That's what this tastes like. Like, sometimes like, when you're brewing, you know, snack on a little bit of malt because it's tasty. And there's like a little bit of bitterness. This is kind of what that reminds me of, but pronounced. Like
they
had boiled with malt husks in there. Mm. And it makes it bitter.
So they didn't really filter it out a whole lot.
So maybe it wasn't filtered. Maybe in their sparge, maybe the grain bed collapsed. And now they've got a bunch of husk that ended up in their boil kettle. And they're like, oh, fuck it. We'll do it anyway.
It's not a bad idea. Let's go to the boil kettle. So
right, onto the boil kettle.
After the lautering, we do boil. Mm-hmm. And that's where you do boiling and the hopping.
Yep.
And that's where it takes like, what, 1 to 2 hours?
1 to 2 hours. I think hour is most common. Like, I've never seen a recipe for a beer that boils for more than an hour. But you also see the, what's that brewery that does the, we've talked about them on like several podcasts now. We need to just fucking drink some of their beer. They do the like the 60-minute hop, and they've got the 75 or whatever, and the 120. Dogfish Head Craft Brewery has their 120-minute IPA.
God damn it, that's what it was.
Yeah, the 120-minute IPA from Dogfish Head Brewery, and I imagine their boil goes for 120 minutes because supposedly they're continuously hopping, or like hopping every minute for 120 minutes.
Right.
So I mean, their boil goes for a long time, but like in the How to Brew book. Old John J. Palmer himself says that like you could pretty easily overcook your wort and you can pretty easily undercook your wort. So like the boil is an important part there. Also, like if you end up with too much water and your wort doesn't have the gravity that it wants, you can boil it a little longer to try to like evaporate some of that water and keep some of that sugar in there. Kind of like how you like if you want to thicken up a soup, you can boil it for a little bit longer. You want to thicken up syrup, you can boil it for a little longer. I mentioned something just a second ago. I mentioned gravity. I don't think we've talked about gravity. I think it's an honorable mention for sure. Gravity is the weight of the wort. So it's basically like sugar is heavier than water.
Right.
So if you have water with a lot of sugar in it, it's going to be heavier. So a higher gravity means it weighs a little bit more. Something like something that's like 9 degrees Play-Doh, which is how you measure gravity. I don't know why. We'll look into that. We'll mention it another time, I'm sure. But something that's like 9 degrees Play-Doh would be like a really, really heavy beer, like 9.6, 10%, something like that. Like that would be like 9, 10 degrees Play-Doh.
That makes sense.
Or though. I think Scott mentioned that his chocolate milk stout was, I think he said it was 10 degrees Play-Doh, and that was 7.5%. But it was also very sugary. So the degrees Play-Doh tells you how much sugar is left in a beer, or how much sugar is in your wort before you ferment, and also how much sugar is in your beer after it's fermented. And there's an equation that you can figure out. Okay, so there was this much sugar in before based on weight, and there's this much sugar after based on weight. well, this divided by this equals this alcohol percentage.
Right.
Right.
And so, that goes back to how you have to do so much math and so much careful calculation behind brewing. And I love that. And back to that chocolate milk stout, I'm still baffled that he made that chocolate milk stout with no chocolate. And it tasted just like chocolate.
That used chocolate malt, bro.
Beautiful. I love that.
Nice chocolatey flavors in it.
Super good.
So you've got your original gravity and your final gravity. So to figure out gravity, we're going to mention this because I don't like mentioning something and then not telling you how to do it. So to figure out the formula for calculating alcohol in beer, subtract the original gravity from the final gravity, multiply this number by 131.25, and the resulting number is your alcohol percentage, or ABV, alcohol by volume. And
I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's a fucking weird ass number that you multiply by, but that tells
makes
you exactly.
Sense. That makes sense. Then you can calculate. Yeah, that makes total
so
sense.
So gravity is huge. pH also is huge. Mm-hmm. Yeast need a certain pH to live. You recently made a batch of kombucha, and like one of the things we did was test the pH, right? Because it needs to be below 4.5 on the pH scale for the SCOBY to not die.
We're for SCOBY-Doo. Mm-hmm. Let's give him the proper name.
Right, SCOBY-Doo. And if we go check the pH right now, when I finish my kombucha, I'm usually at like 3.2 to 3.5 on the pH scale. That's pretty tart. Acidity is kind of measured by like being tart or sour.
Right.
I think that's an honorable mention because you have to have a certain pH, and that's a big thing to keep track of. A lot of times brewers will add some sort of like alcohol or vinegar to try to lower their pH, or add some sort of salts or minerals to raise their pH if they need to as well for the yeast. Or most people use some sort of like reverse osmosis filter to make sure that they have like a neutral pH going in, or whatever pH they want.
Right. Because they can control it essentially.
Yeah. So RO water is easily controlled. And we also mentioned in the IPA episode from Burton, the Burton Valley.
Oh, because of Burtonized.
The Burtonization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was basically taking your water and making it the same pH and with the same mineral content as Burton.
Right.
They just had better pH balance in their water.
Naturally.
Right. And like better minerals and stuff for making hoppy beers. Back to the boil is where you add hops and boil your wort. Basically, you just have to get it up to 200 degrees. That's boiling, right? 202 is kind of like what Sean and Derek shoot for. To kind of get it above 200 degrees. And then you can add your hops. If you add hops in the beginning of the boil, you get more bitterness. If you add hops towards the end of the boil, you're going to get more aroma, more flavor. And then if you dry hop, which is where you hop after the boil, it's where you get a lot more aroma and flavor.
Like the more aromatic on it.
Yeah, more aromatic stuff. So like most hazy or juicy pale ales, IPAs, are going to be like all dry hopped. And the Northeast style stuff that has like debris in it still, those are almost exclusively dry hopped. I mean, you'll find some bittering hops, but they're almost exclusively dry hopped, because that way you don't get a lot of bitterness, but you get a lot of that like
and
juicy.
And I love dry hops because that's where I can still have the flavor, the smell, but not be overpowered with that punch in the face bitterness.
Yeah. I agree. I think that dry hopping a beer can show off a lot of interesting aspects of hops, but I still love, and this is fucking recent, but
of
like.
Of course.
I love myself a nice West Coast style IPA or pale ale, you know?
Mm-hmm. Pale ale. I'm a pale ale person.
Yeah, I definitely lean more towards the pale ales, mm-hmm. but I like the West Coast style. I think it's tasty.
Yeah, it's not bad. And I like the right ones, if they're done right. Before we get to the last two steps of
the brewing,
let's open the final and last beer you brought, which is also a Belkin, correct?
Yeah, we got a Belkin. I'm way more excited about this one.
Why is that?
Because it's a stout.
A Belkin stout. A stout.
Belkin stout.
A stout in the Bahamas, huh?
Right. Well, I mean, I got it because I had to, right? So the last Belkin we had was 4.8%. I opened this and I was drinking it, and I was talking to Ariana, and she was like, yeah, be careful. You're drinking a lot of beer. You're going to get drunk on that. I was like, no fucking 4% ABV. Fucking beer is going to end. I looked at it, I was like, oh shit, 6.5%? Mm-hmm. Like, fuck.
I see. I got the Belkin stout. Same brand, same company. It's a uniquely Caribbean brew, lighter than the English stout and slightly sweetened with Belizean cane sugar. It is less hoppy than most stouts and boasts a subtle blend of coffee, caramel, and chocolate flavors along with a rich texture and roasted aroma. ABV of 6.5.
Yeah, fucking 6.5. I had no idea. Like, it doesn't taste like it was 6.5. Granted, it was served to me like ice fucking cold, which is not my favorite way to have a stout by any means.
Really?
No.
What about nitro cold?
No. Nitro especially should not be cold. My God.
So this one has an 81. This one has an 81 on
81
Beer Advocates.
Really?
So good. They commend it good. It's considered a English sweet or milk stout, and you know how I feel about milk stouts. Ranked 811, not bad at all.
Good but, rankings.
Yeah, not bad.
Let's see how it tastes.
Higher rankings then.
Yeah.
Huh.
It smells. I definitely get that like cane sugar sweetness.
I got it's more natural. That's what it
smells
sweetness.
Like. It smells like cane sugar to me.
Yeah, and it's not as dark as I thought it'd be. A little bit lighter.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it'd be.
Oh man, that's dark. That's got to be like 49 on the old SRM standard reference method.
This is a little bit darker than I thought it'd be. Let's see how it tastes. Wow.
Sweet.
It's sweet but roasty.
Yeah.
But not overpowering roasty.
There's a little bit of funkiness to it. Something that reminds me of like yogurt, which obviously makes me think lactobacillus, because that's what fucking makes yogurt yogurt. You know what I'm saying? There's a little bit of funk to it.
I can get that.
Yeah.
At the very end.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a lingering funk. Like, I don't get a lingering roastiness, a little bit of lingering roastiness, but also, it kind of has that same little bit of bitterness to me. You know what I'm saying?
The other one?
Mm-hmm.
The other Belkin? Yeah, maybe.
Very similar kind of bitterness.
It does have that, but not as harsh as the other one.
Not as pronounced. I think it has more other flavors that are going on in there. Interesting. I mean,
it's
pretty sweet.
Bad. It's not necessarily a great milk stout, but it's not terrible. I like the cane sugar.
Interesting. I think that's the primary part of the beer that I like. It's got a nose of cane sugar.
I think it's the saving grace almost.
Yeah.
Is the cane sugar.
Yeah. I didn't think I would be able to taste the cane sugar so distinctly. You know, also, these are old beers too. So beer doesn't age well.
Always have cold, fresh beer.
Fresh. Not necessarily cold.
Not bad. I mean, for an island stout.
I'm not upset.
No.
Right.
I think this is number two. Out of the three beers you gave us, I think it's number two. I go with the Salavita.
God, the Salavita is fucking great.
And then I go with Stout second.
Yeah, I drink Salavita. I would go as far to say that's like one of my preferred light beers.
Interesting.
It's pretty tasty. But maybe it's grass is greener on the other side and I just can't get it all the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe something like that. Back to brewing.
So last two steps. Number one, cooling.
Yeah.
Obviously, once you get it all boiled, you have to cool it.
Well, if you don't, you know, if you pitch, part of the reason you boil is to kill whatever funky shit got in, like malt and grains and shit. They've got yeast growing on them because yeast is fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
So part of the reason you boil is to kill some of that. Because if you don't kill some of that, it's going to ferment with that other shit instead of the yeast that you add to it. So if you add yeast to boiling water, you know what happens? It dies. And then you know what you have? Hot sugar water.
Final product.
Hot sugar water.
Hot sugar water.
Yeah.
Sounds sexy to drink.
Does it?
I think so.
Add some carbonation. You got Coca-Cola.
Boom. Enough said.
So you got to cool it. Cooling is where you cool it. That's pretty obvious. You run it through like a radiator looking thing and you got cooling fluid on one side. Usually just cold water.
And hot liquid on the other wort side. Gets separated in this part as well. Wort separation and cooling.
I mean, you keep your cooling liquid in the wort separate, but like the wort isn't separating from anything unless, you know, you consider it separating from the boil kettle separating.
Basically from the boil kettle.
Yeah. Also, one thing we didn't mention in the boil, there's a process called the whirlpool, which is where you take wort and you cycle it from the bottom of the tank. Not the exact bottom, from like the side of the bottom. And you spray it along the side to make it spin. And that takes all the like residual proteins and like hop sediment that you added and just makes it kind of neat in a little pile. And then when you cool, you got to pull off the side bottom as well so you don't get any of that sediment in there. Because you don't want that sediment in your beer because it'll make it taste weird. Yeah. After you cool it.
The last, but not least.
Yeah. Transfer to a carboy or a bright tank, you know, whatever you're fermenting with.
Which is the fermentation process.
Yeah.
And that is where The magic happens.
The magic happens.
Absolutely. That is where...
Magic man.
What you famous to say, the yeast eats the sugar and poops out alcohol.
Yep. Eats sugar, poops alcohol, farts CO2.
Farts CO2. That's right. In the greatest way we can put it.
Yeah. This is where you pitch yeast into your fermentation tank or into your wort as you're transferring it over, as long as the wort's cool. Just keep an eye on your temperature and keep it out of the sunlight. You know, anywhere from like 7 days to 21 days later, you've got yourself beer.
There you go.
Right?
And in a nutshell, that is how the brewing process happens, which I'm excited to go forward with that and try it ourselves and to see other brewers do it.
Yeah. There are five things that are always super important in brewing. The first most part is sanitation. Like, you don't keep shit clean, you're going to have some weird chicken that gets in there. It's going to fuck up your beer. Right.
Not only fuck up a beer, but could impact those who are drinking it.
Yeah, it could like hurt people and stuff, right? Or it could just make it sour. You never know.
Yeah.
You got fermentation temperature control. Mm-hmm. Got to keep your beer the right temperature. If you're brewing an ale, you want to keep between 68 and 72 degrees Fahrenheit. It's 20 to 22 degrees Celsius. If you're brewing a lager, you want to brew it anywhere from 45 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 7 to 13 degrees Celsius. And if you're brewing a steam beer, it's where you use lager yeast and ferment at ale temperature. Obviously, use ale temperatures. Lager yeast is also bottom fermenting. Ale is top fermenting. Then you've got to keep track of your yeast. Make sure, you know, it's the right temperature and it's not all dying and stuff. You'll see sediment build up at the bottom. That means, like, it's dead yeast cells. Not necessarily a bad thing, but if, like, fermentation stops, you get too much of that, then you're going to have something weird going on. Got to keep track of your boil. Got to make sure you have a good recipe. Right. A lot goes into it, though. Something we're going to be exploring in the future.
We're legitimately just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
As cliche as it sounds, yeah. We're trying to introduce you to the steps and processes of brewing. When Wyatt and I will delve into this in way more depth. But I hope you guys have learned something today. And until then, we will keep you in the loop. If there's something you guys want us to talk about or touch about, let us know. Until then,
cheers.
Until the next beverage, bro.
Yeah, cheers. Exactly that. Like, whatever you just said, that's what I agree with, for sure. Thanks for listening. This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. Like us, follow us, share us, tell your friends. Next time you have a drink, tell us about it, drink it, you know. Let us know what it tastes like. Tell us if we should try something new. You can find us at tastemastersdrink.com. You can also find us on Instagram at @_tastemasters or on Facebook. We are The Tastemasters. Thanks for listening again.